the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, it's hard to believe that within a couple weeks, summer is here. And what better idea than to talk about taking vacations? And that's the subject of today's discussion. Joining me on the podcast is Mark and Julie Bennett of RV Life. And Mark and Julie, when we had you on last time, we talked about the different type of RVs out there, the Class A, the Bs, the Cs, and the fifth wheel. I wonder if we could just go through those briefly again and basically talk about which one fits most people. In other words, if I'm shopping for an RV, what should I be looking at?
Sure. There's literally hundreds of different, thousands of different types of RVs, you know, different floor plans and brands. It's a very complex space for that. But they try to break down the RVs into a few different categories. First, I'll break into the two main divisions of drivable or motorized, and then towable, meaning you tow it behind your other truck towing vehicle. So in the towable type, there's small little fold-up tent trailers, pop-ups, or there's travel trailers, which is a trailer that's defined as one that hooks to the back of your towing vehicle, like a bumper hitch, and then a fifth wheel trailer that actually mounts the hitch into the bed of a truck. So you need an actual pickup truck for that. Fifth wheels are generally much larger, often toy haulers or very large living spaces. And then travel trailers run the gamut from, you know, maybe a 14 footer up to a 30 footer, but huge variety in that space. And then on the motorized side, they look at, there's a Class A, Class B, and Class C motorhomes. Class A's are the ones that look kind of like a bus, very boxy, and kind of like a loaf of bread driving down the road. And then the Class B's are what is a converted van. So on the surface, they look kind of like a regular van, like an Airstream van or Ram, ProMaster, Ford Transit. And then a Class C is one that's built on a truck or van chassis on the front, but then they have a slightly bigger box on the back, and usually classified a Class C is it has a cab over sleeping area. So above the driving area, there's a sleeping area. So
they're the most common.
They're the most common
rental RVs that you would see out there in, you know, popular locations like national parks and popular tourist destinations. And many of them have branding on the side of it. So I'm sure everyone's seen those, but they're typically Class C's because they're easier for people to drive.
They're a really good, easy entry point for people to jump in and get a feel for things. But the Class B's have been extremely popular in 2020 and showing so far into 2021. And those are the ones that are the van conversions. And I think a big part of that is that they're so nimble and easy to drive that people are just, it's like driving a regular car, and they park in a regular parking space, and yet you still have everything with you.
You know, my RV magazine is talking about this RV van or van life is really taking off and becoming extremely popular. I know a lot of the RV dealers here, good luck trying to find one. They get one on the lot and it's gone in a minute. Why are they so popular? Is it just the ease of ability to drive, the ease to park, the fact that you don't have to tow another vehicle? What makes them so popular?
Well, a lot of what you just mentioned, the ease of driving and the easy to park, you can run around. But I think people that have a regular home are excited about having these as RVs, as little getaway vehicles that they could still use in everyday life. They can might use it for commuting to running errands around town, but then it's just ready to go for a bigger trip. And we know people who live full time in those vans for years. In fact, we have some friends that lived over 2 years in their van, recently sold it for actually, we kept talking to how hard they are to find. They actually lived in it for 2 years and sold it for more than they bought it for 2 years
ago. Wow, that's unusual.
Yeah, so that's not something normally would happen in the RV space. So hope none of your listeners are setting the expectation that they will sell their RVs for more than they bought them for. But that's just an indicator of how hot that space is. But yeah, I just think a lot of people love that flexibility, that mobility. But they're not cheap. You know, Class B vans, it's not at all uncommon to see them over $100,000. And we've seen them as high as $300,000 for some custom versions. So,
yeah. What makes them so expensive? For example, you have the Airstream Atlas. That's a $250,000. You have the Tiffin Wayfarer. That's over $150,000. You know, I think of $250,000 for a van compared to, let's say, a Tiffin Phaeton, which is almost the same price.
Yeah, it's a bit surprising for sure. We remember coming across that years ago when we first started full-time traveling back in 2014, was that the Class A coaches are often similar price to those vans. And I think it's when you talk to the people building them, it's just they're trying to pack so much into this smaller chassis, but there's a lot of it's just demand. There's so much demand for these smaller rigs. And construction styles are different. You know, Class A's, they have a little bit different construction style. And the base chassis is probably similar priced. So, but a different Phaeton. I don't know if you're going to find a new Phaeton in that $250,000 price range.
No, I was thinking of, you know, some of the used ones, but, you know, it's amazing what they can do. And a lot of the vans I'm seeing, like with the Airstream Atlas, they are now doing slide outs on these vans. So they're expanding what you have or the room inside.
Yeah, it just makes a huge increase in the percentage of the space and livability of those. And when you're talking about an Atlas or any of them with a slide, you're generally, it gets a little gray area on whether or not it's called a van or a Class B or it's a Class C. Generally, if they have the fiberglass area behind the driving cab, some people will call that a Class C or a B plus. But yeah, those slide outs make a huge difference in livability. And usually they're about 24 feet long. Most parking spaces are 20, so they might overhang a little bit, but they're still quite maneuverable and will still fit in the space.
Now, how has this affected RVing with COVID? You guys do this full time. Are you able to get into parks, RV centers and places like that, or has that been restricted as a result of COVID?
Well, I think the increased demand for RVing, the increased popularity over the last year now has definitely increased the number of campers out there looking for places to go. I mean, initially everyone was cooped up inside and just wanted to get out. And then I think people started to realize, well, hang on a minute, I'm working from home now. So many companies have enabled people to be able to work from home. Kids are being schooled at home. And of course, it's really the only safe way to travel right now. You've got your own bathroom, your own kitchen, your bedroom with you. And I think that's one of the reasons for the popularity. But campgrounds, you know, there's definitely, again, supply and demand. We are hearing a lot of people saying you can't get camping reservations anywhere. We have not found that to be the case. It is most definitely more popular. It is harder. I mean, especially if you're attached to certain dates. You know, I want to go on the July 4th of weekend and go and spend time in Myrtle Beach or whatever. You know, a popular place at popular times. That's always going to be more difficult if you haven't pre-planned in advance. But I think what a lot of people may not realize, there are enormous number of campgrounds out there that may be a little bit out of the most popular area. And so let's look at national parks, for example, right in around Yellowstone, Yosemite, those really popular national parks, which all national parks are popular right now, but I'm using those because they're common examples. You may have difficulty finding a campground unless you're booking way in advance within, you know, 5 or 10 miles of the park. But if you're willing to open up your radius to, you know, 20, 25, 30, even up to 50 miles outside of the campground, there are still a lot of options out there. And there are also a lot of mom and pop type campgrounds that aren't necessarily on the internet or not as easy to find. And, you know, I think a lot of the new RVers now, that there's a term for them, Jim, they call them COVID campers. And it's people that have gone out and started RVing really because of COVID is really what's driven them into this. And so they may not be aware. It's not just, you know, it's really forced the RV industry and camping and campgrounds to increase their technology and increase their ability to connect with the consumer a lot more this last year. But a lot of them are not as easily pulled up on an app or on an iPhone. And it's just literally a manual search and give them a phone call and they answer the phone, which is kind of surprising. But they still exist. They're still out there. And I think if people are willing to be flexible with their dates and flexible with their locations, there are definitely still campgrounds and campsites out there. You've just got to get a little more creative to look at it. But the other thing that's becoming a lot more popular is boondocking, which is camping off the grid without hookups. And we're very lucky to have so many amazing free public lands available to here in the US, more so in the West than the East. They're a lot harder to find in the East. But that's becoming a lot more popular too, as people are equipping their rigs with off-grid setups with batteries and solar and getting out there and camping outside of campgrounds. So we're seeing both.
So I've been reading up about this boondocking, which is becoming popular because you don't have to go to an RV campsite. You can go to an area you want to see and just camp. What do you need to do that? Obviously, a generator, I would think solar panels, anything else required?
Well, that's one of the beauties of an RV is most RVs are equipped to go and camp off-grid like that. They have freshwater tanks and wastewater tanks, and then they also have batteries to be able to run the critical things like lights and a water pump and things like that. But depending on how many amenities you want when you're out there with it, of course, then depend on what else you need. We have a small camper that we can go out. We just have the battery, wouldn't even need solar to go and have a simple weekend. But a lot of these larger travel trailers, fifth wheels and class A coaches might have higher needs for people. If someone wants to run a microwave or some of these electric appliances, they might then want to have a generator or a large battery bank. But you can be pretty flexible. You don't have to have a lot to get out there. It just depends on what level of luxuries you really expect. And we also have friends who have coaches that can act as if it's fully plugged in a 50-amp site in a campground, running a clothes dryer and microwaves and convection ovens.
We did that
the whole
recently.
Thing.
Yeah.
So it just depends on how well equipped you want to be, and your expense can run the gamut on that.
You know, it's amazing. We have a lot of clients retiring and they're moving out of California where things are expensive. I have one couple, they sold their home here. They're domiciled in Nevada, but they basically bought an RV. And they are going to spend the next couple of years just traveling around the United States, seeing it, and then come to some kind of conclusion as to where they want to live. So it's an interesting way to discover that.
Yeah, a lot of people.
It's a wonderful way to discover that. What better way than to go and actually experience all those areas firsthand? And you can experience them. You just got to keep in mind you're experiencing them at their best weather if you're choosing that. But I think it's a fantastic way. We've seen so many people do that and to have the next chapter of their life, jump into an RV, rediscover. And some people might have the vision of just doing it for 6 months to a year to find that new location and then just love it and end up spending, 5 and even 10 years in their RV before they decide or even still not found a new place to put down roots.
Mark and Julie, let me ask you this. Let's say I'm a new RV person. I want to get into an RV. I'm looking at a Class A because of the size and the comfort that you have in that. What kind of skill set, or do they have driving schools? Because, I mean, you take a look at some of these RVs that are 40, 45 feet, or even these fifth wheels, which can even get bigger. Then on top of that, you're towing a boat or you're towing a car. I mean, you're talking about putting 60 feet on the road.
Yeah, it's actually quite a shock to me just how easy it is to rock up to a dealership in your smart car and drive off in a 45-foot coach without any new licensing. But, some states do require new licensing and just depends. But there are definitely RV driving schools and there's ways to get learned up on that. One thing I would do is consider at least renting maybe a rental truck or a renting towable trailer for moving. Is a great way to practice doing some larger vehicles because you can rent up to 26 or 30 like a moving truck. Yeah. But then if you want to look at those 40 footers, definitely do some test drives at a dealership, have someone show you around, maybe go around the city with in a public transit in a bus just to see how they take corners, give you a little bit of a feel and start paying attention to larger vehicles like semis. But there's definitely driving schools to get you that extra level of comfort. What you can do is you can rent from a private party, like RV Share and Outdoorsy. You can rent some of these larger RVs for your scheduled driving lessons. And that way you can learn in an RV before you buy one and make sure that's something you're comfortable with.
Yeah, we're going to rent a Class B RV and just to sort of get our feet wet and just see how we enjoy it and is it large enough. I'm surprised, though. And this happens the same in the boating industry. You can know nothing about boating, walk into a dealership and, drive away in a 40-foot boat with no skills or nautical knowledge whatsoever. And it's the same in the RV, which is really surprising.
It is really surprising. And like I said, there's some states that do require special licensing, but there's a lot that don't. So it's really up to the consumer to get educated and get safe. And honestly, I would highly recommend, even if your state doesn't require it, I'd highly recommend doing some research on what it would take to have a CDL license, a commercial driver's license, just to get yourself familiar with some of the other different principles involved of driving a larger vehicle.
And what about the mechanics of driving an RV? And let's say you're going to be on the road 3 or 4 months at a time. From what I've read is even if you buy a brand new one, you're going to spend probably the first year working the bugs out. I mean, what kind of mechanical, electrical, technical skills do you need to own an RV?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad you pointed that out because that's really important is that RVs, brand new RVs are not like brand new cars. They almost always have a what's called a seasoning period or braking period where there's going to be little bugs to work out. And that's brand new. And that's a lot of the times used ones too, depending on what level of care the person you bought it from. But I think it's really important to have at least some basic skill knowledge. You know, if you got to know the right end of a screwdriver, because little things come loose, but the more skill you have, the more better off you're going to be because the RV has been so popular this last year. There's a bit of a shortage of RV technicians. So you might expect a longer wait, maybe a month, sometimes even a couple months before you can get an appointment for a service appointment in a shop. But there are mobile techs that can often get you a little bit quicker appointment for if, especially if it's something that's keeping you from moving down the road or a safety hazard. You know, some people can get prioritized for that. But
there are even some great online home study courses out there through, you know, organizations like the National RV Training Academy. You know, for a few $100, you can go and do their online training, and 80% of, you know, repairs on RVs you can probably fix yourself with some DIY. You know, with the right tools, it depends.
And the right learning. Yeah, that's a great point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, NRVTA. Yeah.
But understanding how the systems work, you know, the plumbing, the electrical, how to stay safe with your RV. You know, these are all things actually we just covered recently in our Hit the Road RV Summit with having, it was a virtual event and had a lot of industry experts, you know, explaining what you need to know to be able to understand how to stay safe with your RV, you know, how to operate that electrical post and what you need to look out for and what kind of equipment you need to keep your RV safe as well, whether it's a water pressure regulator for your plumbing to protect your RV plumbing or whether it's a surcharge
for your propane systems. Because there's a lot of different things besides just the mechanical elements of what's getting you down the road, you know. So there's a lot of different systems that people aren't necessarily familiar with in their traditional homes. But there's definitely resources out there. Like Julie said, in our recent Hit the Road RV Summit, we had some great information there. For a more advanced learning, you can go to places like National
RV Training Academy and do online training. Or you can go in and do in person if you've got the time and you've got the money and to be able to do the interest to go and do that. We meet a lot of RVers that go and do these RV training academies, often not because they want to necessarily become an RV tech, but just so they can understand their rig better and know how to navigate that. And also just to help other people out in the campgrounds, because RVs are really helpful folks. You can, we've always said, if you're at a campground and you've got your hood up on your truck or something, it won't be long before somebody comes over and offers to give you a hand. They're very helpful folks. But, you know, obviously the more you can do to increase your own education is always going to help you out, because a lot of these things can be fixed yourself, probably about 80% with the right information.
Yeah, most of them are not super complex, but most of the fixes are something you can do.
And a final question, if you were considering an RV, not quite sure what RV is going to fit what you're wanting to do, how would you start? Where would you start?
Well, I would try and rent a few first, or if you can go to an RV dealership and if they have some inventory, you can at least walk through a few of the different types to get a feel for what is involved in those different types, get narrow it down a bit. And then before you make a big purchase, it'd be great to rent one that you believe would be a good fit. And then also maybe rent one that, you know, a bigger or a smaller one to see how those differences stack up for you.
Yeah, and so even some RV dealers, Jim, rent RV so that if you end up buying an RV from them, will take that credit of the amount that you spent on your rental and apply it against a purchase. So that, you know, some you can rent from places like Outdoorsy and RVShare.com, which are peer-to-peer, so you're renting from other RV owners, or you can rent from the big RV rental chains like, you know.
Yeah, like Cruise America or Bear.
But then again, you can also, many RV dealers, like Giant Recreation World down in Florida. You know, we rented an RV from them last month and drove around. So there are lots of different options out there. I mean, RV rentals have been so popular too the last year, and you've been trying to get those. But it's been really interesting, you know, having been full-time RVs for like 7 years and seeing how the industry's just exploded the last year has been quite fascinating to watch, and how it's kind of defied a lot of the previous rules, like RVs always depreciate. Well, we're seeing a lot of RVs at the moment selling, you know, pretty close to or often more than the previous price, which is, it's been really interesting to see the changes in the industry and the growth, you know, the growth in the industry and how the industry and campgrounds and manufacturers are evolving and adapting to meet that demand.
Well, super. Well, listen, Mark and Julie, you guys have a website with a lot of great information on the RV life. Tell our listeners, if they'd like to find out more, how they could do so.
Great. Thanks, Jim. Well, we're Mark and Julie Bennett from RVLove.com. That's RVLOVE.com. And you can find us all there on social media, YouTube, our blog. We've got lots of content on all of those platforms, and also our best-selling book, Living the RV Life, Your Ultimate Guide to Life on the Road, is a great way for people to get started and an overview of every aspect of the lifestyle. And yeah, we'd love to stay in touch with your listeners. If anyone's got questions, you know, send us a message. You know, we'd love to be able to help.
Super. Well, I appreciate both of you coming on the program. Hopefully next time we talk on this program, I'll be an RVer.
Oh, hopefully so.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear what you end up with, Jim.
Okay.
Thanks for connecting.
All right. Well, take care.
Thanks.
Take
you too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.